Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. So for more than five decades, Olivia Newton-John has been one of our most successful and adored entertainers. A four-time Grammy Award winner, she is one of the world's best-selling recording artists of all time with more than 100 million albums sold. Her starring roles in the iconic movie Grease catapulted her into superstardom. And in addition to her music and screen successes, Olivia is perhaps best known for her strength, her courage, and her grace. After her own personal journeys with cancer, she has thrived and become an inspiration for millions around the world. Now, she's sharing her journey in her new book, Don't Stop Believin', and she is so sweet to take some time for us tonight. Olivia, welcome in.
Thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I got to tell you, I don't know who didn't have a crush on Olivia Newton-John at some point in their life, right?
Oh, I don't know about that, but thanks.
Absolutely, absolutely. So congrats, first of all, on the new book. Spectacular. And it was a long time coming, too. When you were writing, what was it like looking back at life's beautiful journey and such an amazing five-decade-long career?
Well, I think you said it, really. I'm really grateful, and I can't believe a lot of the things that I've done and how many things I've done. I've had so many different lifetimes, and I feel just very, very fortunate.
So when I was looking online just at some of your earliest performances, I was looking at stuff from the early 1960s, which I don't think I've ever seen before, because you're right. You have hit, you know, so many decades, right, in different lives, like just different reincarnations. And there was a show called Sing 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 in Australia.
Yes, you found that, really?
I found that, yeah. Wow. And you won a talent show. I think you went to England because of that show, right?
That's right. Sing 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 was, I think I was 15, and it was a national television show. And the host was kind of like the Elvis of Australia. His name is Johnny O'Keefe. And I went on the show, and I, much to my amazement, won the whole thing. And the prize was a trip to England on a boat, on a ship.
Wow.
So a year later, my mother dragged me kicking and screaming to England. And that really started everything. And, even though I fought my mum at the time, I'm very grateful to her now for that decision.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And, I mean, you kept going. Like, so you went and formed an all-girl group. You teamed up with your friend, Pat, who I knew you're still good friends with, Pat and Olivia. And you met on another show called The Go Show. So there was a lot of great music shows back in the 1960s, even in your neck of the woods.
The Go Show. Well, that was Australian TV. That was the local television show. So Sing 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 and The Go Show were kind of the hot TV shows in Australia when I was young. And Bandstand, something called Bandstand. And we didn't really have television. I think maybe we just got a TV, but I hardly watched it. So I don't really know other ones from America, for instance.
So when you were on TV, family and friends probably at that early on didn't see you at that time. Because, I mean, TVs were pretty rare, right?
Yeah, not everyone had a TV then. But I got great experience because I would, we would tape a show and then do one live every day. I was on an afternoon show, and so I learned a lot from, those early days in Australia. It was my training ground.
Things moved very fast for you, because I know you cut your first single for Decca in like 66, and then in the early 70s, 71, you recorded that cover of Bob Dylan's If Not For You. That was that was huge.
That was a big hit, and it was really weird because I didn't like the song, and I was wrong. And now I love it, and it's interesting because my husband, it's his favorite song. Who would have guessed, right?
I would hope so, yeah, and, I was going to say.
It changed the whole thing for me. But it did really well for me, and my manager and my producers kind of encouraged me to record it, and they were right. It worked for my voice really well.
Do you remember where you were when you heard one of your songs on the radio? Was it that one? And because that's got to tell you right there that you made it. You're driving around the street in your car, and all of a sudden, boom, you're on the air.
I think I was in a taxi in America, and it may have been somewhere like Chicago. But I can't remember where exactly, but I remember being in the back seat and going, wow, there it is. And that was one of those moments. I should have written it down, of course.
awesome. You had your U.S. album debut with Let Me Be There, first top 10 single of the same name. And right there, I mean, so stardom is moving very fast for you. And you win your first of four Grammys right then.
Yes. And I think that's the one that's missing. I'm very grateful. I have four Grammys, but I only have three. And I don't know what happened to the
first one.
I think that's the one that's missing. So,
that's the first one.
Yeah. It's amazing. Let Me Be There and If You Love Me, Let Me Know and Please, Mr. Please were all written by one man, John Rostall, who was English and sadly died and never got to know about the success of his songs. But he wrote some incredible songs, and here he was, this English bass player.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is that somebody you chose to write their music, or was it the record label at the time?
No, Bruce Welch, who was producing me, he was my boyfriend at that time. Mm-hmm. He and John Farrah produced me, and Bruce found these songs because he was in a band with John Rostall, so that's how that happened.
Well, we are talking to music icon Olivia Newton-John, and there's more coming up next on 720 WGN. All right, it's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN, and we're talking to music icon Olivia Newton-John. Hit after hit, and then comes an opportunity to do Grease. You were like 29 years old, and you felt like you were too old for the part.
I did. Isn't it crazy?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's all relative to how old you are, but when I was 29, all I could do was find fault with myself, and now I look back and go, what was I thinking? You know, I looked so young.
You did.
There I was worrying about it. So anyway, it turned out to be great because John Travolta came to talk me into doing it, and then we did a screen test because I was so worried about it. And I was able to see that we had great chemistry, and I could pull it off.
Yeah, I know.
Because none of us were teenagers. We were all, you know, in our 20s. So thank goodness it worked. That's all I can say.
Well, I just find it funny that John had to come out to your house to convince you to even do this, take this role.
I know, isn't it? Yeah, it is funny. You know, I had made a movie in England called Tomorrow. It was a musical, space musical. We were a group that were taken into outer space. And I guess it was a big deal. You know, Dom Kirshner, who did the Monkey, Harry Saltzman, who did the Bond movies, put this together, and it was supposed to be the biggest thing since sliced bread. And it didn't happen. So I think I was just really apprehensive about doing another film, full stop.
But what I love about it is that, you know, the screen test, I mean, people take screen tests when they're auditioning for a role that, you know, the producer, the director wants to see. You wanted the screen test. You wanted to make sure that this was. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, thank goodness it worked out.
Yeah, it did. And it became like, okay, so, I mean, we all know about Grease. It's 40 plus years old, became the biggest box office hit of 78. The soundtrack album spent 12 weeks at number one that year and yielded three top five singles, including You're the One That I Want and Hopelessly Devoted to You and Summer Nights. So, I mean, did you see this as just a changing point in your life? Because, I mean, you've had incredible successes even leading up to that.
Oh, yes. I think it just catapulted me to a bigger stratosphere.
Yeah.
Being a so-called movie star, just, not just singing, because, you know, I was doing very well with my music at the time, which was another anxiety of mine, that what if it affected my singing career. So it was fantastic, and it opened up a whole new world for me.
That's amazing. And you know what's funny? In the 1970s, I was walking into the studio today, and one of our engineers, chief engineers, Jim Holland, said to me, I was at our other space at Bradley Place, which is the television station. It also housed our radio station. And I worked the boards when Roy Leonard, this is about 1978, 1979, interviewed Olivia in studio.
Oh, wow.
How cool is that?
Yeah, really. Say hi for me.
I will do that. I will do that. You're the One That I Want, and I love this story, and I've heard you tell it before, but you never rehearsed what you were going to do. I mean, you had the hair, the outfit, the makeup, and you were, first of all, you were a little apprehensive about doing it.
I mean, I beamed Sandy One, as I call her, in that kind of the sweet little image girl in the first part of the movie, and then we were trying on the clothes because we were starting filming the next morning. And John was filming the song Sandy, we're at a drive-in, and I stayed late to do my hair and makeup and try on the clothes, and I walked out onto the set and showed the director, and the whole crew turned around and looked at me, and it was like, what? You know, wolf whistles and all that stuff that girls complain about. And I go, girls, don't complain about it, because when they stop, you'll miss them.
That's right. That's right.
And, yeah, so that was amazing. And I thought, wow, this is something. I had no idea, you know, it would have that bigger reaction.
But
that was great for my acting, you know.
Sure. Oh, no, absolutely. And I also am confident, because I did too. We had Grease posters up in our room. We had Xanadu posters. We had Physical posters up in our room.
Oh,
I mean, of course we did. Oh my God! I mean, you were America's sweetheart. During that time period. Another Grammy. You were nominated for a Golden Globe as Best Actress in a Musical, and performed "Hopelessly Devoted to You," which was also nominated for an Oscar at the 1979 Academy Awards. Was that a little nerve wracking performing in front of all those fellow actors and actresses?
It was really nerve-wracking. And to top it off, I had a fever, about 103.
Wow.
I didn't know it at the time. You know, I'm always one of those, the show must go on people. But right. I had a fever, and I had hepatitis. And so the next day when I ended up in the hospital, and my doctor called me and said, "Dearie, how many people did you kiss last night? Because we're all going to have a shot."
Oh, no. you poor thing. Oh, no.
So that was my memory of the, I didn't feel my best.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. Do you get a lot of people telling you how formative that film was for them?
Yes, it's really incredible that, you know, all these years later, that is the one movie or the one thing in my career that comes up mostly. I mean, Honestly, yeah. Love You and Xanadu, of course, but Grease is the one that people still talk about it and they still love it. So I feel just very lucky that I'm, you know, a part of that.
Oh, let me tell you, when I tell my kids, especially my daughter, I said, you know, I'm going to be interviewing Olivia Newton-John, and immediately she said, "Sandy? You're interviewing Sandy?" Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
It was a big thrill.
Oh, that's nice. You knew my name. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. When did, you know, you must have realized at some point Grease was going to surpass being a box office hit and become a cultural phenomenon, because you're right. It has lasted 4 decades, and I don't see any end in sight with this movie.
No, I know. It's just something magical about the way that Randall Kleiser, the director, filmed it, and the color and the... And they've upgraded it now. They've just done a whole makeover of the sound, I believe. But it was just something about the energy. And Alan Carr, who was the producer, he used to come to the set and get us all going and, you know, got our energy up so that when mm-hmm. we filmed, we really, that was, you know, you can't fake that. That
no.
was real. And there's a great chemistry between the cast. And it was just fun.
I do have a Xanadu 45. I think in my collection somewhere.
Oh my
but you knocked
That's
that out of the park.
That's
yeah, right?
It is.
Yeah. And then Physical. And out of much of the most successful albums that you had in singles, you also did, and I remember this as a teenager too, you had a bunch of really highly rated primetime TV specials on ABC. Like, you put out an album, you got your own special.
I did. I had a fantastic guest. I had ABBA. And yeah. Elton John, Tina Turner, Karen Carpenter, Cliff Richard, Captain Tennille, or Tony, actually, Tony Tennille. And I think there's somebody I'm missing. But that was my Hollywood Nights TV special. All those people, I look back and go, my goodness, every single one of them was a huge star. I was so lucky. And Andy Gibb, of course, who
sure.
I was recording with at the time.
What do you love most? I mean, do you love being in studio most? Do you love being on the screen, the small screen? Like, what really, like, gets you excited? Or performing live?
I enjoy performing live, but I think I love writing, you know, writing songs, and I like being in the studio. The creative part is less stressful, of course, because you can do mm-hmm. it over.
Yeah, right.
But I think I like all of them for different reasons. I really, really enjoyed my time in Las Vegas. I went there for 1 year, and I ended up being there for 3 years. Never thought that would happen. I thought, I'll do this 1 year and I'm going to be over it. But I really had such a wonderful time. And we lived there and we rented a house and we had our dog and cat. We used to fly our dog and cat with us up there and had a kind of a normal life. And I liked that. It was great. And I enjoyed the audiences and the intimacy of the room. It was great.
But, you know, I mean, the success never really stopped. Like, you just kept going. And as I said, and you said yourself, you kind of... Every decade, you just reinvented yourself and did something new and Physical. I remember that album and that song. you know, not only did it hit the top pop charts, but it hit the R&B charts. It was a global hit. I mean, that was just another next level of Olivia Newton-John.
And it was another thing I was nervous about doing.
Yeah, really.
And it's funny, you know, you say you challenge yourself in life, but I really was worried about that song that I'd gone too far, and I probably had. But at the time, compared to what's on the radio now, it's like a lullaby. But
yeah,
at
right.
the time, it was raunchy.
Well, sexy. I mean, sexy. I would say sexy now.
Yeah,
maybe
sexy.
Back then it was raunchy, but it was also at the dawn of MTV. So, I mean, that's where we probably first saw you over and over again, because it was obviously video on the radio.
That's right. And I think I was the first one to make a video album. I mean, I did every song off that album as a video, and it came out as a video album. So that was a new thing that I'm proud of, and Brian Grant, Melanie Grant, directed it, and that was a lot of fun. Kind of little movie vignettes for each song.
30 albums, over a dozen movies, TV, tours. Your charity work is also endless. And I know, you know, you're fighting your third bout with cancer, stage 4, at your hospital. And I want folks to understand this. Like, your hospital, you built this back in 2008 with the goal to have a place for people to have rest and peace who are dealing with cancer. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, well, you know, they approached me to help build this cancer center. And I had breast cancer, of course, before that. So I asked my mom what she thought of it. And she said, darling, if you can help people, you should do it. So that was all I needed. So I started this fundraising, and I had no idea how I was going to raise over $100 million to build this cancer wellness center. And, of course, I had a lot of help, and we went to government, and I sang almost "We Love You" to the treasurer, and he gave me, like, $20 million.
I do that, too, by the way. If I had it, I'd be shelling out that cash, too, if you sang that to me.
But I decided that I would be involved in the cancer center if they would build a wellness center, because when I went through breast cancer the first time in 92, I was able to myself help myself with herbs and homeopathy and acupuncture and meditation and all these different things to support my immune system and my heart and my spirit.
Sure, both.
So I said to them, I will be happy to help you with this hospital if we can have a wellness center. That was unheard of in a public hospital at the time.
Absolutely.
So we actually did it, and it's open. And all the things that I have been fighting for and that were important to me, like art therapy and music therapy and you know, massages in the room for your feet and hands, I was able to experience that myself last September. And it was incredible to think that all those years of raising that money and fighting for this wellness center that is now kind of included in the whole cancer hospital was real, and I was experiencing it. And it was fantastic. It really was.
That's spectacular. I mean, all the charity work you do. And I know you're getting, you know, great care and holistic treatments that work for you, the right meds. And the most important thing out of all this, because you said yourself, you know, it's part of that caring for the heart and the soul as well. And you're so lucky with your husband and your daughter and friends and family who provide you with that dose of love every day.
I'm so, so lucky. My husband is a plant medicine man, and he formulates both herbal products and cannabis products for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And he made cannabis products for me that are helping me so much. We grew them here because in California you can grow for yourself.
Sure.
And so it's helping me with pain, with sleep, with mood, and I've learned so much about cannabis, what an amazing plant it is, and how healing it is. And you don't die from cannabis, you die from opiates and painkillers, but cannabis is a plant, and it should be available to everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I will tell you, positive thoughts and prayers are with you. I cannot tell you how much I love your book, and it always puts a smile on my face and millions of others when we hear your music, watch your music, and it's a beautiful gift we've been so lucky to have in our lives all this time.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you.
And we barely scratched the surface of Olivia's new book. It's called Don't Stop Believing. It's available wherever books are sold. And to keep up with Olivia, find her on Facebook and check her out online at olivianewton-john.com. Olivia, special time spent with you tonight, and thank you so much for doing this, and be well, my friend.
Thank you. Lovely talking to you.
Lovely talking to you as well. All right, it's 720
okay.
WGN. Bye-bye.